the Business on RTE Radio 1 with AIB. You see it, we help you do it. AIB, for the life you're after.
Well, on Thursday, the death was announced of Formula One legend Eddie Jordan, a man described as a maverick, flamboyant, a wannabe rock star, the man who gave Michael Schumacher his first start and whose career took him from his first job in Bank of Ireland to the top of Formula One. Much has been made of his success on the racetrack, but what about his business style and his personality? We're joined by his very close friend and business partner, Keith O'Loughlin. Keith, you're very welcome to the programme. First, I'm very sorry for your loss, and you were very close friends for a long time, and we can talk about that. But also, you would know his wife Marie very well. A very important person in Eddie's life.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Marie and Eddie were a great team, and he was front of house, but she was the rock behind a lot of the success. And when he was in Formula One, drivers would stay in as lodgers in the house, and we're all part of the family. So yeah, it was a huge team effort.
How did you and Eddie first meet?
So I was in a coffee shop in the south of Spain having coffee with my daughter, and Eddie was in cycling gear at a table just beside me. And I said to Mia, I'm going, that's Eddie Jordan, I'm going to say hello. She said, don't, it'll be embarrassing. So I just went over and said, hi Eddie, if you ever want to cycle, there's a bunch of us cycle here most days. And he looked at me and said, where's that accent from? I said, County Leash. He said, show me Mass from Stradbally. He said, so we're practically neighbours. And then he said, right, can we cycle at 7:30 tomorrow? And I was like, yeah. And by 15 minutes out the road, we had so much in common, knew so many people, and we've been inseparable ever since.
And when was the last time you saw him?
I had lunch with him last week in Cape Town, and it was the day before Marie's birthday, and we had a birthday lunch on his balcony in Cape Town, and he was in great form, made a speech, and he was brilliant.
And that friendship that you had was very close. I mean, how often would you have been in touch with each other?
We'd be on the phone from morning to night doing deals, or you know, and we'd meet. He spent 6 months of the year in Monaco, where I live, and he spent 6 months in Cape Town. So, you know, I think a couple of years ago, in 23, we probably cycled in six different countries and did loads of deals. Like, he was a man who, he just lit up a room. Like, he was like somebody with the volume button, the contrast button and the brightness button turned up to the max.
And he's so closely associated with the world of Formula One. But as you say, he invested in lots of other things. He loved business. He loved the world of business and the idea of doing deals.
Yeah, but doing deals was what he wanted to do. And it was always about the edge. And whether it was for 100 euros or 3 billion, he still took the same approach. Every deal got the same kind of respect, and he would fight for every deal and loved it. It wasn't about the quantum of money, it was about the challenge. And Formula One is business. Like, Formula One is a marketing business of putting sponsors on cars, showing them every week. And he was brilliant. He knew the business. He delivered brilliantly for his sponsors, but it was a business.
He had a fairly colourful motto, hadn't he?
In the FTB.
F the begrudgers.
F the begrudgers. Yeah, he gave everything. His view was that he wanted to pack in three times more than anybody else did into every day. So I feel that he was like, he had 220 years of energy packed into 76 years with a mindset of somebody who's in their mid 30s.
And ultimately, that kind of ability to sell and to do business deals. But he was, of course, a driver. A lot of people would have said, would have been talking about him this week and saying, how did he get to a point where he was able to have his own Formula One team? And you would need huge resources and huge financial resources to do that. But the truth was that he grafted in the sport right up through it for so many years.
Yeah, he really did. He told me a story where he was sitting with Niki Lauda, and they were with the Marlboro team, and Niki pulled him aside and said, look, Eddie, you're a good driver, but look around the room. You've got James Hunt and Emerson Fittipaldi. You've got me, and there's this guy called Prost coming up. You know, you're not going to make it as a driver, but you're brilliant with your commercial background. just start your own team. And that's what he did. And as well as that, he managed so many drivers. He managed Senna. He gave Schumacher his first drive. So he was a real talent spotter. Damon Hill was somebody we brought into the sport. And he spotted talent, not just in Formula One, but in all of his business deals. And with many people whose names are not up in lights, he spotted talent and encouraged and mentored and grew people.
Some of the things about him and what he got up to and things he managed to pull off in terms of sponsorship and deals. There was one incident with DHL and the colour of the car. Tell me about that.
So Deutsche Post were a sponsor of his car, and the car was, his main sponsor was Benson Hedges. Deutsche Post rang him and said, look, we just bought this little courier company called DHL and we want you to paint the car white next year. So white and red, because that's what's DHL's colours. And Eddie said, of course, no problem. So he rang Nigel, his friend, who was in Benson Hedges, and said, Nigel, the car is going to be white next year. I hope that's okay. Nigel said, no. The car is yellow. It's in the contract. So if you change the colour of the car, we're gone. So he didn't know what to do. So he rang Deutsche Post and said, look, I can't take your money because I don't believe in your brand. Let me come to your next board meeting and I'll show you. So he went to the board meeting, fully dressed in Jordan yellow, put a pack in front of all of the board and said, look, I'd love to take your money, but I can't back it if I don't believe it. Turned to page one, were 8 white vans. And he said, look, your competitors are like FedEx. Everybody's in white. Turn to page 2. 6 white vans and 2 yellow vans. And next page, 8 white planes. Next page, 6 white planes and 2 yellow planes. And he said, look, if you change your colour to be yellow, he said, I'll put you on the car and I'll back you and we'll make it great. So they rang him that night and said, yeah, we'll change the colour of DHL to be yellow. And it was funny, last year I was in the car driving with them when they were advertising that DHL were sponsoring Coldplay's tour and the theme song was yellow.
After all that time, he changed their minds. Yeah. I'm sure he found that very satisfying as well.
He loved it.
Puma, he did a deal with Puma.
Yeah, he was the first to bring Puma into the world of Formula One, and their Speed Cats, you know, were fashionable 30 years ago, and now they're coming back into fashion. And Eddie's photo is in the HQ of Puma, and he's very proud of it, beside the likes of Pelé and Maradona and Usain Bolt. And he still, until last year, was getting boxes of Puma trainers through every year. So he's still very close to the brand and loves it. But his legacy in many of those things lives on.
And he had another challenge with sponsoring the two sides of the car, having different sponsors. How did that play?
Yeah, somebody came and said they wanted to sponsor the side of his car. And he was like, well, in his head, I already have a sponsor. So he decided to have different sponsors on both sides of the car. And when the sponsors would come to the races, he'd put one set of sponsors on the inside of the track so they saw their logo, and the other set of sponsors will be on the outside of the track where they saw their logo. His ability to think outside the box was unmatched.
He gave a very nice gift to a friend of his, a watch at one time.
Yeah, he was so mischievous. One of his friends, Dave Price, was in hospital and wasn't expected to make it. So Eddie went in and gave him, I think it was a Hublot watch. And Dave was very touched with the gesture. And then Dave made a miraculous recovery. And a couple of years later, he tapped the watch off something and it just fell apart. And I'm sitting having lunch with Dave and Eddie relatively recently, and Dave turned around and said, do you remember that watch? What was the story with that? Eddie just looked and laughed and said, you hardly thought I was going to give you a real one. You were about to die.
And you yourself were in business with Eddie, and one of the deals that you put together and you made a huge bid for was this online gaming and gambling software package company called Playtech. And the two of you made a big bid for that back in 2022?
Yeah, back in 21, 22. So I went to Eddie and I said, look, I think there's a deal we can do here. I think there's great value in this business. And it was listed on the UK Stock Exchange. So I said, look, I think we could buy it, take it private, transform the business and make some money. So we rang his finance guys and said, put them on the phone. And they said, lads, yous are absolutely bonkers if you think you can pull that off. If you'd like the company that much, buy some shares, take some profit. and leave it at that. So we hung up the phone and he looked and he gritted his teeth and says, we're doing it. That's it. And for the following year and a half, we had an amazing journey, and we got to within 5 days, we raised $3 billion. But it was a very funny story in the middle of it. Like, our first time talking to the executive team at Playtech, and the chairman of Playtech said, sorry, I want to stop you here for a second. He said, I have to make a disclosure. And I'm thinking, what's that? He said, you may not remember, but you and I used to drink in the White Horse pub in Silverstone 30 years ago. And Eddie said, yeah. He said, I do remember that. He said, we were in a one-up, one-down house with an outside toilet. And he said, you know, I'd be getting paid in cigarettes and bring them across to the shop across the road and getting my groceries as a barter. Right? So that's where he started. And he grafted the whole way up and left an incredible legacy.
In terms of that personality and the impact that he had on lots of people, because he would have been a mentor, an advisor to people, a lot of friends in a lot of different areas, but he had these kind of business philosophy sort of little rules he had about how to succeed and do things well.
And that's what, like, there's a lot of parallels between, you know, the Formula One and the business world. Like, he would first off say you have to think big. He would say, you know, anything that came across, unless it made the car go faster, I don't care. He would say we had to show up on a Sunday on the grid. He said, unless we were there, we were out of the game. So don't tell me about delays, don't tell me you want extensions on projects. You got to do it, you got to show up, and you got to commit. And that was his thing when he was doing some business. Like, he would just decide to do it and then give it everything. And as he said in an interview recently, you know, he worked in Jordan, he worked 18 hours a day for many, many years to get it to what it was.
And he didn't carry things, Keith.
No, he didn't. We'd be cycling, as an example, and a car might pull out across the road and he'd roar and shout and say some expletives to them and then turn around to me and smile and say, that's my aggro for the day. Love a bit of aggro. And it was gone. Whereas most people, if something, you know, touches a nerve, they carry
stick with them for
he
a
literally
while.
Was just, it was in, out, and it was gone. He just had this charisma. It was amazing.
He's associated with so much colour and such a colourful person. And he was big into playing the drums. He played with a lot of famous people, didn't he?
Yeah. No, he's played with Bryan Adams. He's played with Chris Rea. He's the drummer on some of the tracks on one of Chris Rea's album. He recently did a gig with Michael Flatley and Rod Stewart in the Shard in London. But even last time that he was in Monaco with me, he was in my apartment. It was Monday afternoon and just came up for a coffee. And 2 minutes later, the music is blaring and he's playing the drums, banging on the table, shouting at me to turn it up louder. So music was absolutely in his blood. And only, I think about 5 weeks ago, he played with Mike and the Mechanics in Cape Town. So even though he was so unwell, he still got up, showed up, and that's what he did. He got up and showed up every time.
And he was still doing things and making things happen in the world of business and in Formula One and racing right up until the end, wasn't he?
Yeah, he like last year he did probably the biggest deal that wasn't a driver deal ever in the history of Formula One, where Adrian Newey joined Aston Martin. So Eddie has known Adrian for over 30 years and he helped to get him out of Red Bull and get him into Aston Martin. And, you know, it was amazing to watch it. It was very close to him to see it. And a lot of it was done from his hospital bed. It didn't matter. He was making it happen. He didn't care. It was number one priority. And it was an amazing deal to pull off.
You'll miss him terribly, will you?
I will miss him terribly. He's had an amazing impact on my life and so many people's lives. And it's that encouragement, it's that commitment, it's that belief that he's given people. So his legacy will live on in everybody that he's touched, and it's far, far, far bigger circle than Formula One. Yeah, he was an amazing man.
Absolutely. Keith O'Loughlin, thank you very much for joining us on the programme and talking to us about your friendship and with that great friend, Eddie Jordan. Thank you.
Thank you.